Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are going to talk about a very specific, honestly very painful moment in time. It usually happens on a Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, the midweek's slump.
Right, but it's almost more violent than a slump. It's a collision. So picture this. It's Sunday night. You have the crisp new notebook. You've meal prepped, six containers of something that involves quinoa.
Of course, it's always quinoa.
Always. And you're going to run a 5K 3 times a week. The motivation is just intoxicating. You feel like a completely new person
Yeah.
just because you wrote the plan down.
Which, by the way, is actually a dopamine hit. Your brain is literally rewarding you for the planning as if you've already done the doing.
Exactly. So Monday goes great. You feel virtuous. Tuesday is, okay, maybe a little friction, but you push through. But then Wednesday hits.
Reality hits.
Yeah. You get stuck on a work call until 6:30.
Yeah.
Or the kid wakes up with a fever. Or, honestly, you just wake up and you don't feel like it. The energy's totally gone.
And that habit that felt so effortless on Sunday now feels like climbing Everest without oxygen.
Right. And then comes the spiral. You miss the workout. You order the pizza, and the internal monologue just kicks the door down. You say, "Here we go again. I knew I couldn't stick to it. I have no discipline."
The shame spiral, it's entirely universal.
And the logical conclusion we all reach is, well, scrap it. Clearly, I'm not ready. I'll just start again next Monday.
Which is quite possibly the most dangerous sentence in the English language. I'll start again Monday.
But here is the thing, and this is exactly why I wanted to do this deep dive today. We almost always diagnose this failure incorrectly. We think it's a character flaw. We think we are broken.
Right. We think I'm lazy or I lack willpower. But if we look at the stack of research we have today, from Simon Sinek's game theory to BJ Fogg's behavior science out at Stanford, the problem isn't your character at all.
It's a category error.
Precisely. We are confusing two totally different things, the strategy and the tactic.
And this is the core distinction we really need to unpack. Because if you can separate these two, that Wednesday failure doesn't have to be fatal. But before we get into the solution, I want to push back a little.
Here.
I feel like strategy and tactic are these buzzwords we hear in boring corporate meetings. How does this apply to me just trying to drink more water or go for a run?
I know it sounds super corporate, but think of it in terms of a map and a compass. This is the analogy the source material leans on heavily, especially drawing from Simon Sinek's work in The Infinite Game.
Okay, let's break those down.
So Sinek distinguishes between finite goals and infinite goals. Most of us live our entire lives chasing finite goals. These are things with a very clear endpoint: lose 10 pounds, run a marathon, save $5,000 for a vacation.
Right, these are the goals we're essentially taught to set. They fit neatly into a spreadsheet. You either pass or you fail.
Exactly. And because they are binary, pass or fail, they are incredibly fragile. Let's say your goal is run a marathon in October. That's a finite goal. It's a specific destination on a map.
Makes sense.
Now, what happens if you twist your ankle in September?
Well, the goal is dead. You failed.
And usually you stop running entirely because the whole point of the running was the race. Once the race is off the table, the behavior just collapses. You see this all the time. People train like maniacs for a wedding and then gain all the weight back a month later.
Because the destination was reached, so the journey just ended.
Exactly.
That's depressing, but very accurate. So what's the alternative? Because an infinite goal sounds a bit, I don't know, floaty.
It can sound that way, but it's actually much more robust. An infinite goal has no finish line. It's a direction, not a destination. It's the compass. So instead of a race, it's become a person who prioritizes movement or build a body that is capable and strong.
Okay, but I can hear the listener right now, and honestly, myself saying, "That's nice, but I can't track being capable on my Apple Watch."
Okay.
We crave the metric.
We absolutely do. But here is where the strategy versus tactic distinction saves us. The infinite goal is the strategy. It is the compass pointing north. I value health. That direction doesn't change just because it rains on a Wednesday.
And the finite goals.
Those are the tactics. Those are the specific steps you take to move north. Run 5K is a tactic. Eat a salad is a tactic. Go to the gym is a tactic.
Ah, I see where this is going. The Wednesday problem happens because we confuse the step for the compass.
Precisely. If your tactic is run on Wednesday and you miss the run because of a massive crisis at work, you have failed the tactic. That is an objective fact. But, and this is the crucial part, you have not failed the strategy.
You haven't stopped being a person who values health. You just encountered a roadblock.
Exactly. But because we conflate the two, we throw the compass away entirely. We say, well, I missed a run, so clearly I'm not a runner. It's like getting a flat tire on a road trip and slashing the other three tires in response.
Right. Well, the car is ruined. Might as well walk home.
It sounds totally absurd when we say it out loud like that, but that is exactly what I'll start again Monday is. It's slashing the tires.
Okay, so if this distinction is so vital, if the strategy is the compass and the tactic is just the steps, why are we so bad at this? I feel like the entire self-help industry is designed to make us focus almost exclusively on the tactics. Mm-hmm. Look at SMART goals.
Oh, SMART goals.
You know them, I know them. Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound.
Hmm.
I have sat through so many seminars on this. It is the absolute gold standard in goal setting. Are we saying SMART goals are wrong?
Not wrong, just insufficient. And sometimes genuinely dangerous if used out of order.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
How could a corporate goal setting acronym be dangerous?
Think about what the SMART framework actually asks you to do. It forces you to be specific and time-bound immediately. It forces you to lock in a tactic before you've even really looked at the strategy.
It demands the how and the when before you've really settled on the why.
Exactly. It's a shaping tool, not a starting point. If you use SMART before you've done the deep psychological work, you end up with a perfectly formatted goal that you have zero actual desire to keep. You're basically building a very sturdy ladder and leaning it against the entirely wrong wall.
So we're doing it backwards. We're buying the expensive running shoes before we've decided if we even like running.
Or before we've asked why we want to run in the first place. The source material suggests a pregame phase. There are three specific questions you have to answer before you ever look at a SMART framework.
I love a good framework. Let's walk through these. Because question one seems deceptively simple. What do I want?
It seems simple, yeah, but this is usually just the presenting symptom. I want to lose weight. I want to read more books. I want to wake up early.
This is the surface stuff, the stuff we tell people at dinner parties.
Right, but you can't stop there. You have to ask the second question, which is really the engine room of the whole operation. What do I really want?
The question underneath the question.
It is, and we have to bring in self-determination theory here, Dussey and Ryan. They are the heavy hitters in motivation science. They argue that human beings aren't just motivated by superficial rewards and punishments. We have three deep psychological needs: autonomy, competence, and connection.
Okay, let's ground this for a second. How does I want to lose 10 pounds fit into that? Because to me, wanting to lose weight usually feels like vanity or maybe shame, not autonomy.
That's a great point. If the goal is I want to lose 10 pounds because I hate how I look, that is shame. That is extrinsic pressure. And the research shows that kind of motivation burns out very fast. It creates internal resistance.
So how do you flip it to something like competence?
You dig deeper. Maybe you want to lose weight because you went hiking last summer and you were wheezing halfway up and you just hated feeling limited. You want to feel capable. You want your body to be a vehicle, not an obstacle. That is competence.
Wow. Yeah. That feels fundamentally different.
It feels completely different. Or take autonomy. Maybe you want to stop eating junk food, not because sugar is bad, but because you hate the feeling of being out of control. You want to reclaim your agency. You want to be the one driving the bus, not your cravings.
So if you can hook your goal into one of those three, autonomy, competence, or connection, you're tapping into a renewable fuel source.
Bingo. If you're just doing it to look good for the high school reunion, that's finite fuel. It runs out the second the reunion is over. But I want to be capable of playing with my kids without getting tired. That's an infinite fuel. That's connection and competence.
So we find the engine. That makes perfect sense. But then comes the third question. And honestly, looking through the notes, this is the one that felt like a bit of a slap in the face. What am I prepared to give up?
Ah, the cost-benefit reality check. This is where most New Year's resolutions go to die.
Because we think we can just add three. I'll just add a gym routine to my already 14-hour day.
We treat our time and energy like they are perfectly elastic. But they're not. They are finite resources. Physics is physics. You cannot add something to a full container without taking something out.
But I want to be the person who does it all. My fantasy self does it all.
We all want that. But every change has a cost. If you want to wake up an hour earlier to run, the cost isn't just the running. The cost is the late night Netflix. The cost might be social. You can't be the friend who closes down the bar anymore.
That's a real identity cost. That's painful.
It is. And if you haven't looked that cost in the eye and consciously agreed to pay it, you will default back to your old life the moment things get stressful. It's not that you're lazy, it's that the cost was higher than you realized and you went bankrupt.
That is such a crucial reality check. It shifts the blame entirely from I'm weak to I didn't budget for this.
Exactly. So let's assume we've done this. We know the strategy, the compass, we know the deep why, and we've accepted the cost. Now and only now do we make the plan.
Okay, so now I can make my SMART goal. But wait, the source talks about right-sizing to reality. This touches on what you just mentioned about the fantasy self.
Yes. We usually make plans for our fantasy self. You know him. He wakes up at 5 a.m. with a smile. He never hits traffic. He never gets a stress headache. He meal preps on Sundays and actually enjoys it.
I strongly dislike that guy. He sets me up for failure every single week.
He sets us all up. Because when we plan, we assume we are going to be operating at 100% capacity forever. But the psychology of change, specifically the trans-theoretical model by Prochaska and DiClemente, tells us that change is messy. It happens in stages. You don't jump from doing nothing straight to Olympic athlete.
But we certainly try to.
Yeah.
We try to jump straight to the maintenance phase where everything is easy and automatic.
And when we inevitably stumble, because we are human and life is chaotic, we crash. So we have to right-size the goal. You have to ask a really brutal question. Is this the version of this goal I can actually do this week?
This week. The tight deadline and the sick kid and the rain.
Yes. Maybe your ideal plan is an hour at the gym. But looking at your calendar this week, that is simply not going to happen. Now, if you stick to the all-or-nothing mentality, what do you do?
Nothing. I skip it.
Right. But if you right-size it, and this brings in BJ Fogg's Tiny Habits research from Stanford, you ask, what can I do? Maybe it's not the gym. Maybe it's 5 minutes of push-ups in the living room while the pasta boils.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here. Because I can hear the listener saying, come on, 5 minutes, that's totally pointless. That's not going to get me shredded. That's lowering the bar way too far.
I get that reaction. It feels like cheating.
Yeah.
But let's look at the alternative. You did zero. Is 5 minutes better than zero? Physiologically, maybe marginally, but psychologically, it is everything.
How so? Explain that.
BJ Fogg talks about keeping the signal alive. When you do those 5 minutes, you are sending a signal to yourself. I am a person who moves even on the bad days I show up.
Yeah.
You are reinforcing the identity.
It's proof of life.
Exactly. A body moving for 5 minutes is adapting. A body waiting for the perfect hour is decaying.
And it brings us right back to the compass. The 5 minutes still points north. The zero points nowhere.
That's it. You are maintaining the direction. And this requires us to fundamentally change how we view the timeline of goal setting. We tend to view it as a yearly event. You know, set in January, evaluate in December.
Or more likely, set in January, forget by February, shame spiral in March.
Exactly. The source material suggests treating goal setting like an operating system loop instead. It's not a one-time event. It's a continuous cycle. Observe, reflect, adjust, recommit. And you do this every single week.
Walk me through that. It's Sunday night again. Instead of just blindly copying last week's failed plan, what am I doing?
You look back at the week. First, observe. I missed 3 workouts. You don't judge it. You just observe the raw data. Then reflect. Why? Oh, I was totally exhausted because of that big work project.
Okay, so no judgment, just facts.
Then you adjust. This is the key. You don't just say, I'll try harder next time. You change the tactic entirely. Okay, next week is also super busy, so I'm not going to pretend I can go to the gym. I'm going to aim for 3 15-minute home workouts.
And then recommit.
Yes. And here is the massive reframe. Changing the plan based on new information is not failure. It is responsiveness.
That's a huge shift in perspective. We usually view changing the goal as moving the goalposts, like it's cheating.
Think about a pilot flying from New York to London. If they encounter a massive storm system over the Atlantic, they change altitude, they change course, they might even divert. Are they cheating?
No, they're staying alive.
They are piloting the plane. If they just flew straight into the storm because that was the original plan, they would crash. Adjusting your tactic because your life got crazy isn't quitting, it's piloting.
That makes so much sense logically, but emotionally, that is a really hard pill to swallow. Because when I miss the target, I don't feel like a cool, calm pilot. I feel like garbage. I feel shame.
And that is the final boss fight of this whole process, the emotional fallout.
We think we can shame ourselves into being better. You lazy idiot, get off the couch.
Yeah.
I mean, be honest, does that actually work?
For a minute, maybe. Hmm. But long term, no.
Hmm.
The research from Kristen Neff on self-compassion shows that shame actually shuts down the learning centers of the brain.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
It shuts them down.
Yes. When you feel shame, you instinctively want to hide. You want to avoid the source of the shame. So if you shame yourself about running, you will unconsciously start avoiding running even more. You stop looking at the data because the data hurts.
Oh, shame distorts the data.
Exactly. Neff argues for compassion first, lesson second. You have to create a safe space for yourself to admit the mistake. If you can say, hey, this was a really tough wake, I'm human, then and only then can you actually look at the obstacle objectively.
But doesn't self-compassion make us soft? I feel like if I'm too nice to myself, I'll just sit on the couch eating donuts saying, it's okay, I'm just practicing self-care.
That is easily the biggest misconception about self-compassion. People think it's self-indulgence. It's not. It's about accuracy.
Accuracy.
If you call yourself a lazy loser, that's not accurate. That's a global judgment on your character. It's dramatic. Accuracy is, I was tired and I didn't plan for dinner, so I ate pizza. That is a solvable problem. I'm a loser is not a solvable problem.
That connects directly to Stoicism, right? The source mentioned Ryan Holiday and his book, The Obstacle is the Way.
100%. To a Stoic, an obstacle isn't a judgment on your soul. It's just information. It's feedback from the world telling you where the work is. But you can't read the feedback if you're too busy beating yourself up.
So what's the practical move here? How do we switch off that shame voice when it's screaming at us?
The sources suggest the friend test. It's simple, but incredibly effective. If your best friend called you and said, I missed my workouts because I was working until 9 p.m. every night. I feel like such a failure. Would you scream at them?
God, no. I'd say, dude, go to sleep. You're exhausted. Just try again next week.
You have to close the gap between the voice you use for a friend and the voice you use for yourself. That isn't about being nice. It's about being effective. You can't coach someone you are actively abusing. And you can't coach yourself if you're abusing yourself.
You can't coach someone you are abusing. That hits hard.
It's the truth. Compassion creates the safety you need to actually learn the lesson and adjust the tactic.
So let's pull this all together, because we've covered a ton of ground, and I want to make sure you, the listener, walk away with a really clear picture. The Wednesday slump isn't the end of the road. It's just a data point.
Right. We started with the vital distinction between strategy, the compass, and tactic, the steps. The strategy is the infinite goal. It's who you want to be. That holds steady. The tactics are finite. They can and absolutely should change.
And we talked about the order of operations, doing the thinking work before jumping into SMART goals. Finding the deep why, using self-determination theory, seeking autonomy, competence, and connection, rather than just superficial metrics.
And being brutally honest about the cost, admitting that you can't do it all, and consciously choosing what to sacrifice so you don't go emotionally bankrupt on a Tuesday.
We also talked about right-sizing to reality, ignoring that fantasy self, and using tiny habits to keep the signal alive, even if it's just 5 minutes. Even if it feels totally ridiculous.
Especially if it feels ridiculous. That's usually the clearest sign you've found the right size for a bad day.
And finally, treating the whole process as a continuous loop. Observe, reflect, adjust, recommit. Piloting the plane, not just blindly following a flight plan that no longer makes sense.
All while wrapping it in compassion, so you can actually stay in the game long enough to win it.
I think the most powerful takeaway for me is simply the permission to adjust. The source explicitly says, a failed tactic is not a failed strategy.
It never was. The compass does not care about your bad Wednesday. It really doesn't. It only asks one simple question. Are you still willing to face the direction you chose?
And if the answer is yes, then you haven't failed. You just need a new step. Maybe a smaller step.
Maybe the smallest step possible.
So here is a final provocative thought to leave you with. We often think that sticking rigidly to a plan is the ultimate sign of discipline. We think grit means suffering through a plan that clearly isn't working. But what if adjusting the goal is actually the braver move?
It definitely requires more honesty. It's much harder to admit, I can't do this right now, than to just pretend and then quietly fail.
Exactly. What if changing the plan to fit your messy actual life is the ultimate sign that you are paying attention and refusing to give up? So ask yourself, are you brave enough to make the goal small enough to actually do tomorrow?
Now that is the real discipline.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you next time.